You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.
Today on our show, I'm talking with Barbara Wilkes. She's calling from Maine, an airport in Maine, and we're going to be talking about architecture and landscape. Barbara, thanks so much for talking with me today.
Thank you.
So, Barbara, let's talk about what projects you're working on now. Maybe we'll get into one or two or more, but can you just give us an overview of what you're working on now in terms of your practice and urban issues or whatever it is that you're currently involved in?
Sure. Well, you know, we work on a lot of waterfronts because we're really interested in these edges and bringing together. They're a place where nature really meets the city, and one of the things we're interested in. So we're working in St. Petersburg, Florida, working on a new plan for their waterfront under construction project in Tampa, Florida, where we're doing both a community boathouse and a new major park. And those are the main ones. And we also have a lot of parks in New York City that we're working on at this moment.
Well, so I'd like to talk about both of those things, maybe one of the parks, but let's just talk about the waterfront. How do you approach the building and working on the waterfront? That seems to be such a sensitive area, both, you know, aesthetically and environmentally. How do you approach that? If I can be that general, and you can move into detail, but I'm just interested in how
sure.
how you go about approaching such a sensitive area.
Also socially sensitive. You know, I mean, waterfronts really bring together. These are in cities, so, you know, there's a lot of cultural content, how people feel about their waterfront, the kind of activities they want to have happen there, the changing uses, and then as well, you know, rising sea levels, the other kinds of constraints. And generally, though, our goal is to get people to have more access and interaction with their waterfront. You know, historically, a lot of these waterfronts have been cut off, although the ones I just mentioned actually were parks that were just renovating to be more, but to be better and attract more people.
Yeah, because I would think, I mean, you know, certainly the waterfront of New York has undergone like a vast change in the last 10 years. In the one that you're working on now, does it really like reconfigure how people look at the space or experience the water itself? I mean, if you could tell me a little bit about how you approach the details of that.
Sure. Well, right now, what it's called the pier approach, and it's between the pier where they just had a competition for a new pier, and then they have a wonderful a downtown kind of a beach drive that's lined with restaurants. So it's sort of a space between that right now is really mostly parking lots. There is a museum of history there, but aside from that, it's generally a parking area and a marina. So, you know, our job is really to make it a more attractive place, a diverse place for that will attract families and tourists. And bring them out to the pier, you know, but also get them closer to the water, enjoying the water. We're really not, in this particular case, going to be able to reconfigure the edge as we do in many of our projects, but we are going to bring people closer to the edge. And the way that we're going to, you know, move the parking away from the waterfront so that the water will be more for people. And we're also going to bring in a lot more ecology, a lot of parking, and there's also where there is open space, it's lawn and trees. And so we'll be bringing in a more diverse that will then attract a more diverse animal community, and also along with some stormwater management. So we'll get different kind of wetland area that will also, you know, attract different, it's a different kind of habitat. And it will be attractive to people. You know, like a swamp is really intriguing looking. The trees are different. So we're really trying to ground it in the place, make it be the kind of landscape that you wouldn't see in New York City, for instance. You know, if I come to Florida, I think you want to feel like you're in Florida. And this is a place of pines and the bald cypress. There's some wonderful live oaks. So it's a it should be a beautiful, diverse landscape that will attract all types of people to it in the end. That's what we're trying to achieve. We're about
and does public art figure into that at all? Is there do you work with artists at all when doing landscapes like that or projects like that?
Yes, actually, in this one, the Public Art Commission is trying to decide how many or how they want to interact with us. So we haven't started yet, but in many of our projects, we have artwork and work with artists, you know, from as early as possible. Because I think, you know, the sooner an artist is integrated into the project, you know, the better will be the result. Yeah, Neri Ward has done some work for us at the West Harlem Pierce Park. We had a beautiful sculpture, Michelle De Bruyne in Canada. Those are the recent ones that I can think of right now. But, yeah, it's very, very integral. We're looking forward to having some art in as well.
That's exciting. And before we go on to, I think, some of the other parks that you've worked on, how do you solicit and work with artists? Is that through open calls, or do you have past relationships with artists?
No, it's usually because these are public projects, it usually is a public process. Sometimes the city has a process already set up, which is the case in St. Petersburg. Sometimes, as in the St. Patrick's Island in Calgary, in Canada, we had a separate solicitation that was handled by an art curator who set out an open call to Canadian artists, and then we interviewed them and selected one, and it's a beautiful piece. So it's always a little different depending on where we're working, but there's usually a chance to interview some artists and find the right one for the project. Or several. Sometimes there's more than one.
Right. And so so let's talk a little bit about you're also involved in some New York City parks. Is that correct mm-hmm. at the moment?
Right. Right.
So let's talk about one that they you're interested in, you know, right now or thinking about and how you approach that, because that's such a, I would think, a different kind of approach because space is so precious in the New York City area.
Well, one of the things that we're working on now in a couple of the parks that are is a thing called Parks Without Borders. I don't know how familiar you are with New York City parks, but many of them have fences around them. You know, and it's a part of our interest in these edge conditions. You know, we kind of believe that it shouldn't be like you're in the city and then you're in a park. The park and the city are really intertwined. And so the definition of that edge between them becomes really important. So in two of our projects that we're working on, we're working on this initiative that the city is now calling Parks Without Borders to take down some of the fences and, replace them with whatever's appropriate to the particular spot. So in, for instance, at this park called C.C. Moore, which is in Queens, where opening it up, it's a little bit of a commercial area, so there's more of a plaza. You can enter the park, you know, anywhere. There aren't just, you know, the three entryways off of this one street that there used to be. So it'll be much more fluid connection between the city and the park itself. We're also, you know, planting a lot of trees and making it into, again, a more ecological place. Similarly, in this, it's mostly a playground called Grant Park. It still will have some fences because our playgrounds in New York typically are fenced, but there is an entry area that we're going to open to the street and make a bit of a, it's on a corner plaza. that will welcome the community into the space.
Well, that's such a, that's an interesting idea. I don't know that idea of, you said it's called Parks Without Borders?
Right, yeah. Mitch Silver, the new, well, not so new anymore, but it's his initiative for the Parks Department. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's great. Again, I just think the idea of parks being seen as somehow separate from even streets. I mean, streets nowadays can be redesigned, you know, to have multiple uses, like more vegetation, bicycles. I mean, the whole complete streets movement. So this is really in that same vein that, you know, how we think about how we divide up places it's a lot more fluid than it used to be. Street uses can overlap.
Yeah, it's fascinating how, especially in New York, the whole city has been, you know, reconfigured with parks or sitting areas in the oddest places, like in medians in near Times Square,
right.
Where there was.
Yeah,
you know, I mean,
we did a pop-up park actually, right next to Penn Station. You know, one of the busiest pedestrian areas. So we closed 33rd Street. It's called Plaza 30. Temporarily last summer, and we're just doing it again, starting it again now, so that part of that street is closed and people can use it for sitting and you know, just basically having a little oasis right next to that very busy train station. So, you know, it's been another kind of experience in even, because even among pedestrians, you know, you still have different needs. Some people want around that area want to keep moving very quickly, and other people would like to stop and enjoy where they are. There's a beautiful view of the Empire State Building. So, you know, it's almost like we think of it as a stream. You know, we're water experts. So, you know, streams have flat, fast-flowing areas, and they have eddies where you can get out of the flow. And so the sort of designing these new public spaces like that have these lots of people doing different things, again, lots of diversity.
And that's such an interesting idea, I mean, because you've also articulated that what's happening in New York. You mentioned a pop-up park. How do you
mm-hmm.
define that? That's not temporary, is it? What do you mean by pop-up
yeah,
park?
No,
and I think I understand, but I never heard that term before.
I do mean it as being temporary. I mean, in fact, the client approached us and wanted it up in like 6 weeks' time. So it was a really fast design and had to be built really quickly. In fact, it was built like a stage set by people that do stage sets. And so we quickly, you know, it was a bunch of wooden construction, seating, and planters, had built-in planters with the seating. And, you know, it was put up just in we painted it over, put up the wooden seating. That's all custom design. And then, you know, it became a park. They programmed it. They had music, dancing, performance, all kinds of things going on. And then it closed again last winter. And now again, it's opening up this time for a little bit longer. It will be open for several years. So, and then, you know, at some point in time, it may become permanent, but it's, so it starts as a pop-up. People see how they like it. You learn and you make adjustments, and, over time, hopefully this will become a permanent part of the city.
And what does the client get out of it? Was the client Penn Station, or I mean, if you don't mind
no,
me asking,
this was a private client, they owned a lot of the adjoining properties. So I think for them it was a way to, you know, make the space more attractive for their properties, but it also provided, you know, public space, public value to the city.
But is the property like a building lot, or is it
no,
just
no,
a
no,
portion
it was the street bed
street?
Itself. It was the street itself and part of their own private property. So it, in the end, you couldn't tell where the private property started and the street began, because we painted over all of it. And, you know, the idea was it flowed. We also included art. We had a Lichtenstein sculpture. Now that's been swapped out this time for another artist. I can't think of their name at the moment, but so, you know, it incorporated different different things that might attract people. But yeah, it's definitely public space, open at all the time, and you know, for anyone to sit down.
But isn't that also a collaboration with the city because they're using public space? I mean, that's such a fascinating idea to me, because here is something that is private but is also a very real public and cultural contribution.
Well, it's paid for by private. It's public. It's a public street. Yes, it had to go through all kinds of approvals, you know, and that's one reason it's just a pilot. It's just temporary. That's the kind of approval we were given also. It's what they wanted, but it's also, you know, it's not permanent. It's not been turned over to any, I mean, it's still public. It's being managed by one of the local bids, not by the developer. So it's, you know, it's not, even though the developer paid for it, they don't have total control over the space.
Because it's partially public space, you mean?
Yeah, the public space is public, and they're not even managing it. You know, that's
right.
What I'm trying to say. It's being managed by other entities that are managing other public space around the area.
I've never heard of that specific idea before. This idea of pop-up parks, the way you just described it, is this something that's new and is happening more, or has it happened in the past and was called something else?
I think it's happening in New York a lot. There are other kinds of examples. You might have heard the parking day, where people take over a parking space. I mean, that is a street space and make it into a park. You know, those would be little pop-up parklets, maybe you want to call them, you know, because they're just as big as a parking space. But it's the same idea, where you're occupying what is part of the public street that had, I mean, the main idea is that you're taking what had been vehicular space and really claiming it for the pedestrian. So it's really about pedestrianization. I mean, the streets are being used by people. Some, they're just not in cars anymore. You know, they're being used in a different way. So maybe that's a better way of thinking about it.
Yeah, I certainly know the idea of kind of the greening of these parking spaces, the way you've mentioned, and I've seen artists and artist collectives, both in on the West Coast and the East Coast, and probably in between, creating temporary exhibits by artists and interactive spaces, often that seem to be built on the same sort of theory or idea that you're talking about.
Yeah, well, I think the idea that a public space is an asset, you know, that's attractive. I mean, people value it, so. I mean, I guess developers realizing that might be useful to them as well. But, you know, it's something, the same reason we work for cities to improve their public space. They're realizing that. I mean, I think this is all a good thing, that the idea that we're heading towards people wanting to be together, gathering together in some kinds of new relationships with nature. You know, having the space be designed in a new relation with nature in terms of stormwater management, sea level rise, all those things as well. So all this is all getting, you know, thrown together in our new park designs.
It's very exciting.
Does that make
sense? It makes a lot of sense. It's been great talking to you about this. Before we go, I wanted to ask you, as I ask everyone at the end of these interviews, is there a book you're reading now that you want to share with us?
Oh, yeah, I'm really reading this really fascinating book, The Hidden Lives of Trees, by Peter Wallenben or something.
Peter Wallenben, yeah.
Right, I'm not good at names. But anyway, I've just been fascinated by this research lately about how trees, and maybe we should actually say forests, you know, they work together, and the tree, all the trees communicate amongst themselves, and as a village, as you know, as a community, work to survive, and that means that they give nutrients, they give help in many different ways to where it's needed, you know, and they take it away from other people, so they sort of redistribute amongst the whole forest. And this is why so important. I'm very interested in forests and waterfronts in the city, and making them be healthier, because I think the health of these things, you know, is ultimately the health of us as well. But yeah, so they're really, it's much more complex, and they also communicate with other organisms, this, and you know, that is all part of the system, not unlike in our own body. You know, there's all these other organisms that help us. So it's fascinating. He pulls on the, he's a forester, but pulls on the research of a lot of other people. Recommend it to everyone.
That is fascinating. I'm glad you mentioned that. Barbara, I want to thank you so much for talking with me today. It's really been fascinating.
Thank you. Thank you for asking.
You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.